The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh and you're listening to Breakfast Grill. With us today, we have Paul Slavin, Managing Director of Estee Lauder Malaysia. Paul, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Joyce.
Estee Lauder turned 72 this year, and since the group first started shop in 1946, the operating landscape for the beauty retail business has changed drastically, right?
Absolutely.
So competition has increased and intensified even more so in the past few years, with the likes of Sephora and celebrity entrepreneurs like Vivi Yusof entering into the fray with their own makeup brands. And we also have fashion brands like H&M moving into the beauty retail scene, right? So what is your strategy to stay in the highly competitive game against the tough operating business landscape?
Firstly, thank you for interviewing me this morning. Most kind of you. We welcome competition. I think it's great. Competition makes us all better for the consumer. So whenever I'm talking to malls or Sephora or department stores, the first question we always ask is, which of our competitors are going to be there so that we can understand the brand mix, the business mix that we're looking for. So number one, competition makes you better. So that's a great thing. I think the other thing that we are blessed about is that we are a portfolio of 35 brands. So if, for example, you want to talk to a younger consumer, we have a brand. You want to talk to a more sophisticated consumer with a higher disposable income, we have a brand. So we're able to talk to the retailers to say, this is the brands that these are the brands that will work for you, and here are the brands over here that will work in another place. So we're very lucky that we have so many brands that we can play with to really try and understand the consumer expectation and the consumer journey better.
Speaking about brands, to attract new younger customers, the Estee Lauder Group acquired indie brands like Too Faced, Becca and Glam Glow. And traditional brands such as Clinique, Bobbi Brown, MAC and Estee are sometimes perceived as too mainstream or old, right? So what measures are you taking in order to make these traditional brands relevant today?
So the Estee Lauder brand is a great example. It's the brand that founded the company 72 years ago, as you reminded us. There was a part of an image problem, I think, a few years ago. But if you look at Estee Lauder now in Malaysia, it's growing strong double digit. It is one of the fastest growing brands in Sephora. It's available online. It's available in freestanding stores and it's available in department stores. So the strength of a brand doesn't diminish through age. It can. But if it's a strong brand like Estee Lauder who listens to the consumer. So in the last 3 or 4 years, we have opened 9 freestanding stores where we've really tried to understand what the consumer in that part of Malaysia wants. So if you look at our store in Pavilion Mall in KL, it looks the same as the store in Tabrau in JB, but there's a different product mix, there's a different focus depending on what we think and we understand those consumers in that part of Malaysia want. And I have to say that brand in particular has been very successful in terms of reaching new audiences, and particularly through skincare as well, because younger people tend to default to makeup first, but trying to get them to get into skincare can be a little bit more difficult. But I think that brand has been really successful. Bobbi Brown, we've just really, in the last few years, we've renovated the look and the feel of the brand to make it more younger. It was a bit too educational. So therefore, a little bit cold, and we wanted to make it a little bit more fun, a little bit more approachable. So brands that are established, brands that are old, can still be relevant if they listen to the consumer and they have the courage to go and do something different.
From a price point perspective, beauty retail and fashion stores and the likes of Sephora are priced more competitively compared to premium brands such as the ones under your group. So how do you make it compelling for consumers to buy your brands?
So one of the things I always tell my team continually is we must be authentic. Your product must be authentic. Your messaging, your social media content, your advertising. Consumers are very savvy and very clever, and they will see the value of a product. I don't talk about price because we're in the luxury position of only being in luxury, if you will. But value is not just price. So if you perceive a Bobbi Brown lipstick to be valuable to you, to be good value, then the price is okay. So we will never win a price war. We don't want to win a price war. We're not equipped for that. But we can win the value war in terms of defining the value for the consumer. So is the product different in some way? Is the messaging more attuned to the consumer, et cetera, et cetera? Those are the things that we can do to add value for the consumer. And that's why the premium brands still work, even when you have, there are lipsticks available in Malaysia, 20, 30, 40 ringgit. That's not the game we play, but those can live side by side with the lipsticks that we sell. That's completely fine because it covers the whole market then.
Speaking about luxury, I understand that the ultra-luxury segment, especially for skincare and fragrances, is an area where beauty retail, you can see growth opportunities there, right?
Fantastic,
so could you talk to us about that?
What is interesting for me is 10 years ago in Asia, all of the brands and all of the companies were talking about skincare. And then social media exploded. And for the last 5 years, everyone's been talking about makeup. It's all about makeup because it's instant benefit, instant gratification, instant good looks. And that's really been driven exclusively by social media. In the last 2 years, what is, I think, fascinating is that skincare is coming back because the skincare brands have listened and learned that consumers want instant gratification. They want things to look and feel good now, not use it for 1 month and see how I feel. And I think the brands have responded really well. And in particular, the brands under our portfolio that are growing the fastest are the ultra-luxury, ultra-high-end brands. So La Mer, we've had it in this country for 17 years. It is the fastest-growing brand in my portfolio at the moment. Jo Malone, it is the fastest-growing fragrance brand in Malaysia. We can give you an exclusive now and say that we're launching Tom Ford Beauty before the middle of this year. And that is up, you know, in the upper tier of pricing. And we are very confident about the success of Tom Ford when it launches in this summer. So there is a real market for ultra-high-end luxury because, again, this is back to the perceived value. If you are given the right high-touch experience and given it in the right way, then these products are value for some people.
Okay, so Tom Ford, you're going to open in Klang Valley first?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay, are you looking at any other brands or any other brands to tie up with or to buy?
Oh, the company is always on the lookout for a good bargain, but we never discuss it publicly. I think there has been a lot of measures and a lot of acquisitions in the last few years in beauty. And we're always on the lookout for things, but we'll never buy it just for the sake of buying it. Mm. You know, it would always need to add some value to the portfolio for us to be interested.
So for Tom Ford, how many shops are you looking at?
Well, for 2018, I will launch one freestanding store, and it's going to be the second freestanding store in the world.
Where is it going to be?
It's going to be in KLCC, and it's going to be the first in Asia. And the brand asked to launch it in Malaysia because of the success we've had with our freestanding store portfolio in the last few years. So we're very excited about that.
Interesting. So given the current tight economic landscape, you're obviously not seeing a drop in demand for such products. Because, for example, a 30ml tube of a tub of Creme de la Mer is what, priced at 730 ringgit.
Correct.
And so is your target market not affected at all by the tougher economic conditions?
We don't see that at the moment. We see for our higher end price brands, we see that KL is very strong. We see Penang is extraordinarily strong at the moment. And we believe that there is room for these brands in Kota Kinabalu and also in JB in the coming year or two as well. So we don't see that affected. Now, of course, some of our brands are affected more than others at these times like this, but our ultra-high-end brands are not affected at the moment.
Interesting. So I guess the 1% is not affected much at all. So earlier you were talking about social media. So digital and the rise of social media has certainly changed the game for most retailers.
Correct.
And notice that the group is tapping into social media influencers to help sell your products.
Mm.
Like, for example, you give these influencers freebies or you pay them to post up related content in hopes to garner consumers from that, right? So how effective is this? And what is your social media and digital strategy moving forward?
So it's a really interesting question because 20 years ago, people would read a beauty magazine and think, this is new, I haven't seen it before, I will go and find out about it, and they went into a shop. Consumers now shop completely differently because it's instantaneous. They don't wait for a magazine to come out. It's today, it's tomorrow, it's now. There's a lot of celebrity endorsement. But there's not just celebrity endorsement, there's a lot of friends endorsement as well. So Snapchat, Instagram, all of these things cause people to say, this is great, I've used it, you should try it, etc., etc. So you see a lot of people going into stores, taking a photograph of a product and sharing it with their friends and asking opinion. So that has changed the way. We've bought some brands recently, such as Too Faced and Becca, Glam Glow and Smashbox, as you mentioned. And those brands have been literally built and conceived in the last 5 to 10 years to discuss how to best use social media to influence consumers. So we bought in that expertise with these great brands. The other thing is in Malaysia, we are working with key opinion leaders. We are very careful, I noticed you said, about us paying people. We do that very occasionally because we want authentic recommendations. Consumers are very savvy now, as I said earlier. They know if someone is being paid to only recommend one brand. They get it. They understand what people are doing. They see through it. It's very clear. It's very simple. So getting people to post because they think it's good is worth much more than paying someone to do it, right? So the trick is how do you get the right KOLs to cover the entire Malaysian population in the right way, authentically. And that's an ongoing battle for every brand, and not just in beauty, in every brand, anything to do with retail at the moment. But it's super interesting time at the moment to be around this sort of behaviour.
I'm speaking to Paul Slavian, Managing Director of Estee Lauder Malaysia. After this, we'll talk more about the group's business strategy and also get Paul's take on the evolving outlook of the beauty retail market moving forward. Stay tuned to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Grill, and my guest today is Paul Slavin, Managing Director of Estee Lauder Malaysia. Paul, earlier we were talking about your digital strategy moving forward, and digital first is important because it's where consumers, especially millennials, are tuned into. Globally, Estee Lauder started a digital first mindset a few years back, and its efforts seem to be bearing fruit. Looking at your latest results, revenue rose 17% on year to $3.74 billion in net sales. So this is just for second quarter.
One quarter.
Yep, December 31st, 2017. So tell us more about this digital first strategy, and what are the other areas or other factors that have fueled this growth in sales?
What's really important for any successful brand is to be where the consumer wants to be. So 10 years ago, television adverts were very important because you can put them on YouTube, you can put them on the internet, they can be banner ads, etc., etc. Those are much less effective nowadays. In the space of 10 years, that has changed, the landscape has changed. Ads in beauty books are less effective because, as I mentioned earlier, people want to know instantly when something new is available and someone is using it. So part of the strategy of the company is to be moving our investment strategy away from traditional media and into new media. So into social media, where majority of consumers make decisions. Now, we talk about Snapchat and we talk about Instagram. Facebook is still really important because what's interesting is if you look at younger consumers, the millennials, they will make their decision on Snapchat, on Line, Instagram, YouTube. Older consumers, 35 plus, they'll make their decisions on Facebook. Right, so you can't just say it's only about Instagram. You have to be much more nuanced than that, depending on the brand, depending on the product, depending on the demographic that you want to get to. So, for example, in Malaysia, what we did was we set up a corporate marketing team just last year, and I brought in consumer engagement managers. So we have a team of about six and then some CRM people on top of that to really try to understand where do we best speak to our consumers. Malaysia is a really unusual country for companies like us because you have Malay consumers, Chinese consumers, Indian consumers, and traveling consumers. So we have four big buckets of consumers we must address. And they like to be spoken to in different ways. They come into premium beauty through different channels. So the Chinese consumer will come in through skincare. The Malay consumer will come in through lipstick and foundation. The Indian consumer probably through foundation. The traveling consumer will come to us through high-end skincare. So you need to be understanding where to pull the levers as a company. And as I mentioned before the break, we also recently purchased, just nearly 2 years ago now, we purchased some brands, Becca and Too Faced, and a year before that, Smashbox and Glam Glow. And that was really to understand these brands were born and brought up in the digital age. They have never done traditional media. They have thought of how will the consumer see this and interact with this as the first stage in how they want to launch a product, which is, for most premium companies, an upend of the way to normally do things. And they've really brought that expertise in terms of thinking, how will the consumer see this? How will the consumer react to this in a digital age when there is so many adverts in the digital age? Because television adverts were always very expensive, so there was only a few brands who could afford it. But nearly every brand can afford to be digital. So it's how do you cut through that clutter and do something interesting? And these brands brought a great deal of that expertise to the company. So we have been skilling up our brands to understand consumer engagement better. We have been diverting revenue towards our digital strategy, and we've been learning from our baby brothers and sisters who we bought recently to see, well, if you can behave like that, why can't Estée Lauder behave like that? Why can't MAC behave like that, which are two of our biggest brands in the portfolio? And I think it's a really interesting time for the company. I think the company has done very well off of it. If you read some of the earnings calls, there was a lot of nice compliments about the strategy of the company, saying that, you know, we were one of the leading proponents of how to get our brands into digital age. And I think we've just started that journey. I think there's a long way to go yet. You know, 10 years ago, Instagram did not exist, right? And yet now look at the influence of Instagram in how people purchase things, right? So what's going to happen in 10 years, we're not sure. But I think Facebook, Instagram and YouTube will be around, but for different products and different consumers.
Speaking about differing consumers, halal beauty products, the potential is huge given the market that we're in and the low penetration rate. Are you guys looking to diversify into that?
We always, every year or so, we look at it and we come back to it. Before I was here, I spent a lot of time in the Middle East with the company, and that was, again, a topic we looked at there. At the moment, there is no consumer demand in premium for halal cosmetics. There is a growing demand, I accept, in mass beauty and in numerous personal care products. But premium, we see no demand. When you talk to consumers who want to either come into premium or already in premium, there is no demand at the moment. We're keeping an eye on it, but it's not something that we're actively looking to move into at the moment.
Notice that the group is moving from traditional channels such as department stores to own freestanding ones, e-commerce,
yes.
Sephora-like channels. So how is that strategy panning out, and how does that affect your business relationships with department stores, companies like Parkson and the likes of that?
It's a tricky question. So first of all, the nice part of it, I think we've done a good job here in Malaysia. When I came here 6 years ago, we were in department stores, and there was half a dozen Sephora's that we had a couple of brands in. And MAC, which is our biggest makeup brand, was freestanding, but the rest of our brands really weren't there. We now have a 3 or 4 channel strategy per brand, and each brand has their own channel strategy. But we, the Estée Lauder Companies, now has 62 freestanding stores in Malaysia. We had less than 20 6 years ago. So we have valuable, great relationships with department stores. Parkson is still my biggest retailer that I work with very closely. And we've found a way to change our business dynamic with Parkson. We do some joint ventures with Parkson in different parts of the country where we've rationalised our department stores. These relationships are very important to maintain and grow where possible. But the most important relationship is the relationship with the consumer. If the consumer isn't buying cosmetics in a department store, we need to find a way to be with that consumer. So we now have 6 brands in Sephora. As I said, I have every one of my brands is now in freestanding stores in some way, shape or form, including Creme de la Mer, and Tom Ford will launch in freestanding. Jo Malone is only freestanding. We haven't done anything else but freestanding with that. We've launched 3 brands on e-commerce. We've launched some brands on Lazada, where we're doing a trial with them to understand how we can work on a retailing platform online that is not just our own e-commerce business. Very early days on that. So MAC, Estée Lauder, MAC Clinique and Origins are available on Lazada.com. Lazada is owned by Alibaba, who owns Tmall, and they're looking to recreate what they're doing in China across Southeast Asia. It has to be a different business model, but I think it's a very interesting trial we're doing there. So you have to maintain your relationships with your existing suppliers, but you have to be not afraid to look for new relationships and new ways of doing business. And I'm going to come back. You have to understand where your consumers want to buy your products. That is the number one thing, because at the end of the day, the relationship with the consumer has to be the most long-lasting relationship that you have.
Coming back to the beauty retail sector, what trends are you seeing in the market and what's the outlook for this region when it comes to the sector? And do you find that young girls are putting on makeup too soon? Is that a trend as well?
That's a tricky question you slipped in at the end there, I see. It is a grilling. So let's start with the easy one in terms of the trends. When my mother, if I go back 20, 30 years, used to buy her makeup, she was Estee Lauder head to toe. You know, Estee Lauder foundation, Estee Lauder lipstick, and then a spray of Estee Lauder fragrance. And most mothers were like that, or are like that. Nowadays, people don't buy brands like that. They don't buy into single brands. They buy cross brands. So 10 years ago, it was about being, as a consumer, being delighted in buying across a brand, different brands, to show your own expression of independence. Nowadays, the trends we are seeing is around what we would call hero products and trends. So looks, how do I get that look that X celebrity might be wearing or my friend is wearing? So it even becomes less than it was before. It's more about looks and trends in terms of how can I achieve that two-tone lip, right? Which is, it's a big fad at the moment, is to have a two-tone lip. Or two-tone nails that change when nails go into water, the colour changes. These are trends at the moment. It's about individuality and trends linked together. And we use the phrase hero products. So it's, you know, the most famous iconic products from each brand are used to achieve that. So I think that is one of the biggest trends at the moment. And as I mentioned earlier, another trend that we're seeing now coming through is much more subtle skincare than before. So that's why skincare is coming back. That can give much quicker results than previously, whereas because people, it's instant gratification nowadays. Your final question, which was the tricky one, and I haven't ignored it. We're in the lucky position of being at the relatively high end of the market. We don't see younger consumers coming to us. You know, under the age of 18, I think handfuls from our business. So our price point and our restricted distribution kind of keeps us out of that fraught discussion with parents.
Okay, so yes, nothing to do with the premium luxury beauty segment that you are in, but why do you think young girls are putting on makeup too soon?
I actually don't think that's a beauty question. I don't think that has directly to do with beauty. That's around the effect of social media on children and whether or not parents are allowing their children to access social media at whatever age it is. So this is a much wider question than beauty, if you want my honest opinion.
So you think it's more to do with social media and the whole instant gratification and
absolutely,
the exposure it has to do?
And the looking up to people, the celebrity culture of looking up to people.
Okay. Well, I've been speaking to Paul Sevin. Paul, thank you for being on The Breakfast Grill today. It was a pleasure having you. I'm Joyce Goh for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.